This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
Everything and nothing all at the same time. I feel like I'm...
Same.
Like busy again, but it's mostly just like work related. I don't have anything going on like outside of work, but I guess since work takes up most of my week, I feel like I'm so busy.
I'm right there alongside you and the exact same feelings, actually. I am incredibly busy at work and it feels like I'm just busy, but I'm not outside of work.
Yeah. What about you, Chris?
Busy at work and busy outside of work. We are, I don't know, still waiting on our bid for a house, but trying to get cabinet plans and appliances and all that stuff. And, you know, that it's just like a never ending list of things to find. We have a rough idea of like, we want a white oak floor, but there's 50,000 different white oak flooring options. Which one are you going to pick? So yeah, we're kind of in that mode of have to make some decisions and whatever and get that going, hopefully. And next week I'm hoping we get a bid, but then we got to take the bid to the bank and then give them all our like show where every single penny went for the last couple of years. It's the joy of being self-employed. They want to go dig through everything. And so, yeah. It feels just as busy outside of work. It just feels overwhelming at the moment. It'll be good in a year when we're done.
Yeah, that sounds overwhelming.
You're nervous laughter. You're like, it's really overwhelming.
Yep.
This week just ended RailsConf. I did not go. And I know Andrew tweeted he did not go. So Chris, I think that makes you our RailsConf 2021 expert.
Yeah, I guess. For someone who, I spoke, but also, you know, that wasn't live. It was record that, I forget when it was due, say 3 weeks ago, sometime in March. You lose 3 weeks of time that you would have spent like working on your talk. You would have probably done that closer to the conference and in real life. But yeah, I think it went well. I mean, they had basically like a giant Discord set up with all the like birds of a feather, and the talks each had their own room and all kinds of, you know, things. And that was pretty active, it seemed like. So people were like using Discord as the way to talk to each other. And so then there was like a Q&A that each speaker had, and you would just be in Discord and answer questions or whatever during that time, which, you know, it was not a big deal. The thing is, like, you know, if you go to give a talk, then you see how many people are in the room. I don't know of any way to know how many people watch my, you know, talk and stuff. So I don't know. So yeah, I didn't watch. I was busy this week and like didn't get to watch any of the live keynotes or live streams or any of that stuff. And it was just before we hopped on, was watching the Tender Love keynote, which is always good and gets into like some really fascinating performance things as he always does, which was good. But it seemed like people were pretty excited about the conference, and given that it was online and they haven't had but a year to figure out how to do that, they've done a good job, I thought. It was interesting, you know, as a speaker, I didn't really get to attend and, you know, do too much of the actual interaction stuff. But from what I saw, people seemed to really be enjoying it. And I mailed out, like, I found my old packs of Go Rail stickers. So yesterday I was like, hey, if anybody wants stickers, I'll mail you conference swag. So I sent out like 30 letters yesterday or whatever. And that was kind of fun.
That's ballsy. That's a ballsy thing to say.
Yeah, I found another like 100 stickers here. So, you know, maybe I'll tweet that out or whatever and mail those out to people or something. They're just sitting here collecting dust because I don't have any conferences to give them out at anymore.
Well, I heard next year is going to be in Portland again.
Yeah. Wasn't last year the goal was Portland? And so they just kept the, hopefully the venue and everything.
That's what it sounds like. So I will be there.
Yeah. I plan on being there too. It sounds like fun.
I plan on trying to get to RubyConf in Denver this year.
I also plan on doing that because I will actually be a lot closer to Denver this year.
When and where are you moving?
So when I said I'm not busy, I should be busy. Let's be very clear about that. I am moving in 1 month to Arizona. I currently live basically the border of North Carolina and South Carolina. So I still haven't found a place to live, working on that. I'm kind of a work at my own pace kind of guy. I figure out things when I need to figure them out. So it's a work in progress. I'm not doing anything, but I could be doing more. But yeah, I'm moving to Arizona, somewhere in the Phoenix, like a Phoenix suburb, most likely. And yeah, pretty excited. I was trying to figure out the logistics of moving. And then I kind of like surveyed all my crap. And I was like, I don't really have that much stuff. And I was like, that's awesome. And so what I've basically decided is that if it can fit in my car, it can go.
Nice.
Perfect.
And then I'll just drive. And for reference, I have a 2018 Mustang, so I don't have a truck or anything. So
I was going to say that's the important thing, because if you're like, oh, by the way, I drive a U-Haul truck.
Yeah, yeah. I have a big rig, by the way.
Yeah, you'd be a badass big rig driver.
Dude, thank you, Jason. You know what? I'm going to own that. That makes me feel good. I feel like I'd be a good trucker. I always wanted to be a trucker.
You can update your Twitter bio for that.
Yeah. Drive big rigs. On the weekend, I write code. Sometimes I code while big rigging.
Weekend coding sounds like the dream. Just do it for fun. You could do that during the day if you had one of those. Was it Tesla who announced they were trying to get into the trucking industry like years ago? And then no one's heard anything.
Freightliner did though, right? Because there is a company that's doing it right now that's actually like in production and there are trucks on the road. I think it's Freightliner.
Huh. I saw a video of the like Tesla semi on a racetrack or something they were testing not that long ago, but don't think it's hit production yet or anything. But what's new?
You know what's also stupid? That Hyperloop thing that they made. They made like a glowing tunnel and they're like, oh my God, it's the future. I'm like, bro, it's a single lane tunnel. I think you've just, we're evolving, but backwards.
Yeah. Chris, your talk was on Action, Text, Turbo, all the things, right? Action Mailbox.
Yeah, it was on a lot of things melded together. So I wanted to basically show how you can take inbound emails with Action Mailbox, then save them in Action Text and store the attachments and all of that inline. Very similar to like what Hey World probably does, where you can send an email and it turns into a blog post and stuff, you know, or like GitHub issues and PRs, you're going to reply by email and that stuff's going to show up on the website as a comment and all that. And then I went through and like, I talked about receiving emails, saving them, and then sending them and keeping track of the IDs of your mail message IDs so that you can send out a reply that will show up in the same thread in Hey or Gmail or whatever you use. And just having the in reply to set properly and the references headers and so on, and just keeping track of all of that stuff. And, you know, having those broadcast the messages to the web view so that you can like see the email show up in real time and send out your email replies and all that. And yeah, it was quite a project to explain in 45 minutes for the talk. So I'm actually going to go and make a detailed series on that on GoRails and just like build the entire thing that I covered in the talk, but you know, actually show the steps as we go instead of screenshots of code as I was explaining it in the talk. So that should be a good little series to do next.
I would like to watch that.
I would too.
I finally am doing a Rails work where like I'm using Action Text, I'm using Active Storage, and I don't have any crazy requirements yet, and it all just kind of works. And It is nice. Yeah.
There's a lot of documentation I wish existed for the internals of like how action text and that stuff worked. But like once you understand a little bit of that, then it's significantly less daunting. But it can be hard to read through the Rails source code and see like, you know, this method's kind of defined in three different modules or whatever. And you're like, which one's called when? And, you know, the strange piece of moving code into modules and then like this class is calling methods. You don't know where they came from. And it can be pretty confusing to like tie those pieces together. So I wish that stuff had more, you know, documentation on it, but it'll get there eventually. And that maybe is something I should do, but
PR is accepted.
Who's got the time?
We've talked about it before. It's been a while, like I think after Andrew joined the show, but like I tried to use action text, but I needed tricks to do more things. And then it was mm-hmm. like, as soon as I started talking about like storing like a table, action text was like, oh, that needs to be like an attachment essentially. And
yeah,
it all started breaking down for me. And I was like, I'll just store this as a big piece of text in a database.
Yeah. You know, there's some blog post that someone was talking about, like they added tables to action text, but then like they didn't include any code for it, which is kind of like, okay, why did I read this blog post? Last year, my talk was on action text and like using it to embed like YouTube videos and stuff, which is interesting because like that's one where you don't need to store it in the database. You can like store it in memory if you want, and you could just include the ID in the sign global ID or whatever and use that to like instantiate a class and have the ID passed in, and it doesn't have to be a database model. That's an interesting option that you could probably use for tables where you didn't have to do it as a database back thing. But 99% of the time, your attachments are a file or some other, you know, model like a user or whatever. There's definitely ways to do that. And that's what the thing I was thinking about with tables was like, love to see, you know, an implementation of that. Building the tricks buttons and UI stuff would be interesting too, because probably need some of that maybe in line next to the table that's kind of a popover like tooltip kind of bar to add a new row or a column or something. I feel like that would be not the simplest project.
Yeah. Luckily this one I just need like sometimes some people want to bold some text, sometimes they want to put some list in, and works great for that. So
yeah. There was some PR that I know has never been touched, I don't think, but somebody like replaced the internals of tricks so that you could have it store and render markdown instead. And I was like, that's kind of cool. It would be super cool if you had tricks support both, where you could use one or the other, because there are not very good markdown editors out there right now. But yeah, I was like, that'd be a really cool thing. I don't know that they want to support that, of course, but you know.
Yeah, I've done some investigation into this in the past because I've never really had to do any crazy rich text editing for any sort of job or anything. And every time I want to do it, I'm like, okay, I want to embed markdown because it's usually for me or it's a side project or whatever. And I'm like, I don't want to write in rich text. I want to write in markdown. And I'm pretty sure that Sam was like, no, we're not going to change this to allow markdown. And I was like, sad day. I understand, because I'm sure that's no easy task. And I think they kind of consider tricks to be quote unquote done in terms of features. So it makes sense, but God, I would love it. It would be great because there would finally be a really good markdown editor for Rails. And there, you guys both said there's not. I mean, Jason, we paired one day and you were switching out some bespoke markdown editor for one that you paid for that was actually like a lot nicer. But again, like you had to pay for it and you had to figure out how to get it in there, and you get the scripts and you got to worry about Turbolink / Hotwire and whether it's going to play nice together and yada, yada, yada. And it's just painful. And I really just want to write markdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before we hopped on the call, Chris, you were saying something about some turbo native stuff. Turdo or native?
Turdo. Is that what the JavaScript developers call it? Turdo?
Turdo.
Yeah, they want to be writing React or something. Yeah. Joe and I are working on the iOS wrapper for Jumpstart Pro, which is pretty sweet. So you can slap the Turbo iOS stuff around an app, but like there's nothing native there. So we've been working on configuration stuff and native auth screens and basically like getting all that kind of wired up in a really easy way. So you could just kind of slap it on your app, but you actually have some native functionality and stuff, and then going through and kind of documenting all that and how to customize it and whatever. Because a lot of times you can put your app in an iOS app, but like, you know, you have to hide the browser title and render your navigation. But really, for it to feel native, you need the tabs for your app and you need like four there. But then you have to, it depends on your app, like what you want to display there and whatnot. So we've been going through that whole process of setting up the authentication to work with Devise and, you know, do the login for not only the web views, but also the app itself, so that you can make API requests from native Swift code and so on. There's going to be a lot to it, but it's a pretty cool thing. It's awesome to be able to throw a before action authenticate user, and then your browser in the app is like, oh, okay, we'll show you the native login screen instead of just the browser view, which is sweet. So I don't know, maybe another couple weeks on that or something and we'll have it all much more polished, but it's been fun to like, you know, build something like that. I just did a screencast for GoRails on the request variants for the templates for like phone and tablet and whatever. Have you guys used that ever?
No, because I write responsively, but I feel like before responsive design existed, that's what I would have used.
You can do responsive, but like you're also shipping a bunch of other things that you may not need on the phone. And so it's interesting to have those template options where like you could change your layout so it doesn't include the nav bar on mobile or whatever. Because you're like, why ship that HTML if you're going to hide it all the time on mobile? So why even send it over? So I was poking around on Hey's login screen and their JavaScript has a little helper that shows like, hey, if the user agent's Hey iOS or Hey Android, then you can check that in your JavaScript. Well, I tested that user agent and you can see on the page, like if you are on the desktop one, it has the logo and the login form centered vertically. And if you use Hey iOS, they skip the logo because you don't need that. And the form is all the way at the top of the page. It's not centered vertically and all that. So like there's a lot of that stuff where you're like, okay, on the turbo version of this, let's ship these different templates with simpler stuff or just different things. You could have different Webpacker packs or asset packs, different CSS if you wanted, you know, optimize all that stuff. And yeah, I've never used the request variants before, but now that I'm digging into this, I'm like, it does make a lot of sense. Like, why ship a lot of these things if you're not even going to use them at all? It'll make your mobile app faster and more efficient and stuff. So it makes a lot of sense, but then there's also the like whole thing of your mobile app is usually simpler. Like on Gmail on your phone, they're not all the same options that you have on the desktop. So like you can tailor that and say like, here's the four core features that you can do on your phone. Go to the desktop version if you want to be able to do some of the more advanced filters or whatever else that you might do that are more complex. Your phone version can be nice and streamlined and tailored. And I was like, that seems like one of those features of Rails that's been around forever that like I've just never used. And it's nice to be able to finally play around with it and be like, wow, this is really, really cool. Because the only change you do to your app is like any template you want to replace or override basically is .html plus phone.erb or whatever. And it'll use that. And if it doesn't find it, it'll fall back to the regular HTML ERB. That's it. There's nothing else you have to do really, aside from analyze your user agent. But yeah, it's cool.
That's pretty interesting because, I mean, there's a lot of websites where like on the mobile view, they're like, no, we're not going to show you all these options that like you need, but sorry, bro, you're going to have to go find them or they don't exist. So on my phone, I literally just on like an iPhone, you can zoom out the page just like you can on a normal browser. And I just zoom out until it gives me the desktop preview. And then it I'm like, okay, now check. If you're sending different variants, like you lose that. And I'm like, I guess at that point, I'm kind of curious whether Gmail sends you a different variant or if it's just a truly responsive design that they get all crazy with Angular with. I'm going to have to test that later. That's interesting because at what point are you almost handicapping your users by disallowing them to get to that page variant?
Some of that you want to think about, but also like if it's some complicated feature, like they're probably not going to want to do that on the phone in the first place. And I think that's why it just gets removed a lot of times because it does get tricky for a small UI on a phone. Like you got to zoom in and out and like be able to tap on things. So it is a thing where you have to strike a balance for sure. But I think the optimization of like, hey, we have CSS or something just for mobile. So like we'll just ship it with that variant. I think that's an awesome option there, especially because like if you look at the Tailwind UI navbar examples, they're like every navbar is two navbars of HTML because there's the desktop one, but then the mobile one is not just a compressed one. It's like a totally different format because it needs to show up differently to feel nice. And that's an example of like, if you know that you're always going to ship that HTML to Turbo Native adapters, just skip the whole desktop rendering of the navbar. Like just show the mobile one only. That way you can optimize your HTML and whatever else you might want to send over. And that's really where I think that'll shine the most, the variants. So I'd love to hear from somebody that's like used that a ton because I don't know of hardly anyone that's ever used it, but it seems like there's a ton of value there if you got to maintain these Android. And that's another thing, like iOS and Android are like different things. So you can actually split up your templates too if you wanted to have things look more native for each device or whatever. It seems powerful, but I haven't used it and I'd love to hear from anybody that has.
Those are like big company problems to have. On a small team, like if you're doing that, why? It's like a lot of effort, a lot of manpower, a lot of extra code just to like do that. And but when you're at that scale where you need that and your brand is very important, yeah, that's interesting. I'm going to have to dig into that a little bit.
Yeah. What else is new with you guys this week?
Not a lot to report about from Podia Land right now, but talking the last couple of weeks about a side project I've been working on. We're trying this thing where we don't try and finish it before we let people use it. We're trying to like get it into a really barely usable state and start getting feedback. So we're going to start doing that Monday. We have five people. So I'm trying to like mad dash on nights and weekends to finish this, but it's been going pretty well. I'm thinking about trying out Render to host it. I don't know yet. I mentioned it to Andrea and then she was like, oh yeah, I'm going to check this out. And the next morning she had like a whole blog post on it.
I saw that.
Yeah.
So it was good too. It was a good post.
Yeah. So
yeah. Yeah. I just tested a deploy there this morning. I talked to their CEO yesterday. It seems like they're on the way to make a nice Heroku competitor. They're going through all the like hard parts of how do you build something that big and scalable and like containerize all these apps and manage all that stuff. But yeah, there's definitely some things that are like, the Heroku build packs are extra polished and renders at the moment, they have some of that stuff, but it's also like kind of tailored to be generic first to support anything. But yeah, it deployed the Jumpstart code base really easily. And there's like a render.yaml that I can probably put in the repo so that, you know, you can just deploy that to Render and it will go and set up your database or whatever else. But yeah, they've got managed Redis and I don't think they have plans for MySQL yet and whatever. So they got a ton of catching up to do. But of course, like who wouldn't at that point? Heroku's had this feature set for like as long as I can remember. So there's a lot of catching up. But it seems good and the pricing is very, very solid.
Yeah, I don't mind paying like Heroku pricing, but if you offer kind of the same thing for cheaper, like I'm going to at least look at it. A couple of things that I saw about Render that I liked is like you can define like a health endpoint for your app. And if for some reason it returns anything that's not a 2 or 300, it'll reboot your server for you automatically. And like, I thought that was kind of cool. What else?
I mean, to be fair, you could do that with a cron job on your local machine.
I could.
I'm just thinking, because I love adding like little endpoints that are like health endpoints, which show you like a little dashboard of like the Redis health and the Elasticsearch cache and yada, yada, yada. I love doing that stuff. So I've had things like that in the past where I'm like, I could pay Pingdom or I could just send a curl request.
Yeah, I thought it was cool that it was baked in as like a first party thing. Mm-hmm.
That is cool.
They have an unofficial API that I'll have to use for custom domains to be able to like have my users add their own domains.
Nice that they have that already though.
Yeah. So that was the thing. Like I was like, maybe I could bug Chris and get this into Hatchbox, but given the amount of money I pay for Hatchbox each month, I didn't figure I had any clout.
That's actually going to be really magically easy in the next version, because we're going to switch from Nginx to Caddy. Okay. So you'll be able to write your Rails app to just like hit the Caddy API on your load balancer or your main web server. And then like, hey, add this domain or remove the domain and you're done. You won't even have to do any SSL because it'll be automatic with Caddy, which is sweet.
I've worked on several applications at this point, and I've noticed that regardless of the business or application, there are a few support requests that you will inevitably see at one point or other. Is the site down? I was supposed to get that email and it never came. And inevitably something doing with the cache. And with Honey Badger, you can answer all of these questions and more. You don't need a fleet of different monitoring tools for just your cron or your front end and your back end. Get all the answers to whether that scheduled task for that email ran without an error, the site speed and whether there's a problem, which users are being affected if there is a problem, and what specific error is causing that issue. Set up in minutes or click the one button on Heroku. It's that easy. I literally did it right before this recording. Give Honey Badger a try. Let them know Remote Ruby sent you. Be like Honey Badger with no cares, because you know they have your back 24/7.
Even with Render, like all I'm going to be able to do is add the custom domain like to my app. I don't know. I haven't looked, but I think I'm going to still have to set up like a Caddy like in between. Because
they won't provision SSL for you?
I don't think so. I don't know. But also, I could probably get away with it, except like I would probably have to like have my users point their DNS to like a Render specific domain. And so like if I wanted like domains.storeform.io or something like that, then I would have to have Caddy in the middle. I've been talking to Andrea about it some, but it's at least nice though that I can at least add the domain into Render programmatically.
Yeah. I would assume they're going to fix that at some point, so it'll handle SSL there or whatever.
It may already.
Does Heroku do that?
Heroku does, but like we too have we call our custom domain proxy, which is a Caddy server, so that we tell our customers it's not like pointing it to like something.heroku.com, right?
The Caddy stuff makes it, Caddy version 2 makes it super easy. I would assume that Heroku's using the AWS cert manager or something like that behind the scenes, since they're pretty tightly integrated with AWS. But the Caddy's been a blessing. It just feels like someone actually understood, someone who was used to configuring servers and how much of a pain it was, then was like tired enough to like go build your own web server, which is not an easy task. And they've done an amazing job with that. Matt, I forget what his last name is, that's the lead dev on Caddy. He's fantastic. Like hops in Twitter threads all the time and whatever. Caddy's, one of my new favorite tools, I think.
We've been talking about Caddy for like 5 minutes and no one has said what Caddy is. So for the folks out there who don't know what it is, Jason, you sound like you use it at work.
Yeah.
Here's your golf clubs.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. And I was like, but But they come to your house or to your server with your clothes?
Yeah, they're just like out. Always behind you.
I need that.
It gets a little weird at night. Swift
slap in the head sometimes. Like, don't do that. You know you don't want to do that. I'm like, yeah, you're right. All right, what's Caddy?
So Caddy's just a web server, but it's written in Go, and it handles things like HTTPS for you, stuff like that, automatically. Yes. So,
and it's now, I don't remember if it was always open source or like its own business or whatever, but it's now like owned and managed by Zero SSL, which is a like a Let's Encrypt compatible SSL service, but you can pay for it and they will let you do like multi-domain certificates and year-long wildcards instead of 90 days. And it's kind of cool because you can set Caddy up to like use Let's Encrypt. And if that doesn't work, then use Zero SSL or whatever. So like you can generate certs and have fallbacks in case one of their APIs was down or something. It's now like a part of their stuff. But yeah, it is a fantastic web server. The only thing that I don't love is the insanely nested JSON configuration, which gets like 20 levels deep sometimes. And you're like, what is this?
So I don't have a ton of raw Caddy experience. Andrea rewrote our entire custom domain system using Caddy. We were using Nginx before that. But it's an interesting thing because the way we're going to do it is basically our service creates a bunch of like pop-up shops, but it's for like print shops, right? So like a print shop has multiple customers. They need multiple pop-up shops. So we're going to have the company add their own domain, which might be like Bill's Print Shop. And then when they fire up a pop-up shop, it needs to be like easthigh.billsprintshop.com. So yeah, I don't really know all the ins and outs of it yet, how we're going to do it, but.
So what I did 2 weeks ago, so I took Jumpstart Pro, which already has like the domain and subdomain like detection stuff and uses Access Tenant to set the current account. So I built the job board for GoRails on that and deployed it using Caddy. So if you want to try it out, like it's not totally set up to work on for other job boards yet. There's still language that's tailored to like our version. But you can go to jobboardly.com and that gets SSL automatically from Caddy. And then you can create your job board and set your subdomain. And then I have the wildcard subdomain DNS pointing to that same server. So then the request comes in for like gorails.jobboardly.com or whatever. It will give you SSL automatically, which is sweet. And then on my job board settings, I can also set the custom domain, so jobs.gorails.com, and then just take that domain, point it to that same server, and Caddy sees that, gives it SSL, and voila, you have your subdomains and custom domains all running off the same server and with SSL and everything. So it works like magic. It felt amazing to just have that work out of the box. Like it was quite a good experience coming from the Acme SH and Let's Encrypt setup that I've been dealing with on Hatchbox. I wish Caddy version 2 was out way back when, because it really solved a lot of those problems to make this pretty seamless, but it was not. So I have Vietnam flashbacks of Nginx and Let's Encrypt setup, and then to go to Caddy and be like, wow, I didn't do anything and it just worked. Feels awesome.
That's good to know, because we are talking at work about potentially abandoning Docker. Like we have no idea if we're going to do it or not. It's just like kind of rumblings in the crowd. But we were talking about alternatives and someone was like, what about Hatchbox? And it wasn't even me. And I was like, ooh. speaking of, we are hiring. So if you want to come work with me, I'll put a link in the show notes. And I can promise you that the memes that I have are really the only contributions I can create, but they're good. So like you want good memes, but also it's a great company and I absolutely love it. So we'll put in the show notes. Feel free to reach out to me on Twitter.
You should post it on jobs.gorails.com as well. Wink, wink.
Oh, I'll do it. I will do it.
I can't believe. So that's been up for 2 weeks now, a week from Monday. And there's already like 44 jobs posted on there already. I know one of them is already fulfilled, which is crazy. So the Rails hiring right now is amazing. It's pretty insane. But of course, the thing that I wish there was more of is mid and junior level jobs. Like if you go through here, it's principal, senior, staff, all these higher level jobs, but we need more juniors.
Yeah, I know. And so for what it's worth, I am and always will be a big advocate of hiring juniors. Unfortunately, we just can't right now. Because for what it's worth, our entire team started off at this company as juniors.
That's so awesome.
We're very, very dedicated to that. And unfortunately, we just lost like a very, very senior person who was like one of the only people who wasn't a junior when they came to us. It says we're looking for a senior, but we will also take a mid who's like a solid mid. It's just not in our capacity right now to deliver the type of experience that a junior needs to thrive and grow. And I have an awesome manager. He's very in tune with that. And like, if we're going to bring on a junior, then we want to make it like an experience where we're not just throwing them into the wild and like, why aren't you writing code? Like, that's not what we do. Like, we want to help nurture them and like, you know, bring them along for the ride, not just throw them in the muck. We just don't have the time to do that, to really provide that experience where not only does the junior thrive, but the company thrives because of our commitment to growing that junior. And we just don't have the time right now, unfortunately. In the future, we definitely will get back to it. But for right now, it does say senior. We will also take a solid mid though.
Cody is kind of run into that situation too. Luckily, Jamie, our CTO, he's very aware, like we want to hire juniors, but we don't have the resources to actually like give juniors the experience they need right now. It's like something we want to work towards. I empathize with that because there's a lot of people when we open jobs, people I know who are trying to get, you know, entry-level jobs. And I'm like, I'm rooting for you. I really am. I can't help you at this time. And it leaves me so empty inside.
We can't help them by giving them a job where we work. That doesn't mean we can't help them.
Well, that's specifically what I mean by I can't help you in this specific instance.
I'm not speaking for either of you, but if you're a junior out there and you're trying to get help, one thing I will say is that the resume is very important and I'm happy to review resumes. I do it all the time. So if you're a junior and you're looking for a Rails job, feel free to send me your resume. I'm happy to look, happy to answer questions, happy to do whatever I can to help you.
Samesies.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
When it gets caddy file time, I'll probably hit you up because it sounds like you're an expert in it.
Yeah, the fiddling with the nested JSON and stuff is not the best, but once you get the hang of it, it's not so bad.
I'm really excited to hear the new version of Hatchbox is going to handle a lot of this stuff. I think that's a badass, I think that'd be good.
Yeah, SSL, I think, has been one of the toughest parts of Hatchbox as is, partly because the Let's Encrypt certbot stuff was like, here's the official directions telling you to install, like, use the Ubuntu package. But then if you go to the GitHub issues, they don't have anyone on the team to like manage that or who understands it. And so they're like many versions outdated. The new Ubuntu comes out and it's got a different Python version that doesn't work with certbot and they're not scheduled to like update that for a long time. So from the maintenance standpoint for building Hatchbox, Let's Encrypt and Nginx have been just a downright pain in the butt. And to have something like Caddy to solve those problems is just, it definitely has like a lot of features to go because it's not Nginx that's been around forever. But, you know, there's all the core functionality there that you need and it does it all pretty well. And there's not a whole lot of surprises that we've seen with it so far, which is great. But it's, I hope, going to make version 2 a lot nicer. The only reason we're building a version 2 anyways is because like, I don't really want to force people to convert from Nginx to Caddy. And if they've customized anything, that's just a nightmare. So it was kind of like, we'll just rebuild it from scratch and fix a bunch of things. And that's one of the rare occasions where building from scratch sort of made sense, but at the same time, it's like, it's a real pain. So,
yeah. And I just checked Rendered's like custom domain documentation. They do the SSL creation, sweet, renewal, redirection, all that good stuff, even for wildcards. And that's something Heroku, you have to pay like at least $80 for, I think it is, for like wildcard
support. Yeah, I wonder how they do the wildcard stuff on Render, because at least if you're using like Let's Encrypt or whatever, like you've got to put in your API keys and they verify that with the API request that you own the domain you say you own. So I wonder how they do that, or they have their own certificate manager thing or whatever. It must do that. Something else.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It just, I don't know. Render kind of feels like a breath of fresh air. Don't get me wrong, I really like Heroku.
Yeah, Heroku is just like no HTTP2 and dyno prices and performance haven't changed in I don't know how long. It's just starting to like show its age and people are, you know, you expect a product to improve. You know, Basecamp builds their one version and then replaces it with a new one and you can upgrade, but at least you know something new is coming and things are getting better. But Heroku doesn't feel like things are changing at all, really. So I think the HTTP2 stuff with Hotwire is kind of a deal breaker for a lot of people who want to be using Hotwire.
Yeah, and asset handling and all this stuff. Like the HTTP2 thing is huge.
Yeah.
I want it. Yeah. Give it to me, Heroku. I know you can hear me.
Render's got it.
So. I know. I want to use Render, but like I don't have anything real to deploy. And I'm like, I don't want to pay for something that's not like, other than Hatchbox, like I pay for that. Just because I'm like, whenever I need it, it's there and I want to support Chris, but I don't want to pay just for nothing, you know, like for a joke that I'm like deploying.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that's interesting too is like, I imagine there's a day when Hatchbox wouldn't be needed and you could just use Render for everything. But like Render is going to charge you for every cron job, background job, web server, database, and all that stuff. And that adds up pretty fast, you know? And if you've got 30 apps that you run like I do, like I can't afford that, but I can run several of them on the same server on Hatchbox. And, you know, that costs one fee instead of four per app or something. And so I think they're always kind of be like, you know, Render will be way better at review apps and scaling and, you know, providing all this stuff, because they're containerizing everything. And I'm sure Hatchbox will get into doing that at some point. Like all the build packs and whatever are kind of open sourced, so we can containerize your apps and do similar things. But like at the end of the day, we're running your app on your server. So like if you want to go install anything or you want to tweak whatever configs or just SSH in and run other stuff, it's your server. Do what you want. Whereas containers add that level of complexity and other things that you get benefits, but it also comes at a cost of like just complexity and having to pay for all those services. So I can imagine that both of them will continue serving different needs for a while.
Bro, there's no cost to Docker. What are you talking about, man? There's no cost at all. You just put your app in the container. Like, come on, man. It's already in the container on the server, basically. It works the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all just, say very incorrectly.
That's it. Yeah. This is pretty sweet. I'm probably going to merge this here in next week or something. But one of the guys who bought Jumpstart Pro has made a pull request to improve the Docker file there. And the Docker builds are like 37 seconds now or something. Or no, let's see.
What was it?
Optimize the like Docker build stuff to be just like lightning fast and, you know, cache everything well and whatever. And I was like, this is sweet. And it was interesting too, because, you know, like the Alpine images for Docker are often like what you reach for first. But he showed in his PR, like the Alpine image for a Rails app that needs dependencies very quickly is actually larger than the Ubuntu image, which I thought was interesting because we're installing Postgres's dev library and Node and Yarn and the Postgres client and your image magic and things. And he compared the two and it was like, yeah, the Alpine image is actually larger than the Ubuntu one. It's like base, if you're doing simpler stuff like a Go app is way smaller. But if you're doing something like we're doing with this Rails app, it's actually smaller to use the Ubuntu image, which is fascinating. But good Lord, you build those images like 10 times and you're out of disk space.
Yeah. I'm going to need a link to that PR. No reason. I'm not saying that Docker builds take a long time, but if they were, I'm going to want to look at that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
How like you can take the Alpine image, but then you have to add all this crap into it. And at a certain point, you're like, is this better? Has anyone ever measured whether it's better? That's probably a no.
So this PR without cache is a faster build by 60 seconds. So it went from like 150 seconds to 90 seconds with the PR. So baseline was like faster. But then the subsequent Docker build with the caches was 8 seconds to rebuild the image.
Word. All right. Yeah.
And I was like, dang. Right. So I don't use Docker much myself. So there was a bunch of these things that I just did the bare minimum and got it up and that was good. But he went through and optimized it. And I was like, wow, like having the caches there and it builds the image in 8 seconds, then that is fantastic. So yeah, that'll be a nice one to merge. So you run the bundle install. One of the gems for Jumpstart is actually just in the lib directory. So the configuration for Jumpstart lives in there. And we didn't want that to like have to invalidate the gem file and the bundle install. So he actually set up an extra bundler group and we omit that during the Docker build because it's already part of the code. You've already got it installed, so you don't need to do that. And then just require that library right in your application.rb file instead. So kind of just skip installing that local gem, which you already know is going to be there because it's part of the repo. And that made that a lot more cacheable and stuff. So some of those little tweaks made a big difference there, being able to reuse that bundle cache there by doing that. So it's pretty cool. So I'll share that with you and that will become a free upgrade for anybody that uses the Dockerfile with Jumpstart Pro.
Well, anything else you want to chat about before we call it a day?
The only last thing I was thinking of was no rumblings about Rails 7 at RailsConf, I don't think. I didn't hear about it, at least. But that was what I saw Raphael or somebody talk about. They were hoping to get it out by RailsConf, and we didn't even get an alpha. So, yeah. Maybe, what's your guess?
Called it, by 6 months? I called it. I totally called this. I was like, there's no way.
Yeah.
I think it'll ship in 2021. That's as far as I'll go.
Yeah. Well, if we get DHH on the podcast again, we can convince him to go, like, just release it. Like,
do it live. Do it live.
I was really hoping, but, you know, there are some pretty big changes, like with Hotwire. And I know that, like, the Devise isn't ready for Rails 7 yet, partially because of the Hotwire stuff, but also partially because of the, did you see the Constantize improvement that happened in Rails 7? That's like, they deleted basically the entire Constantize method and replaced it with like const get on object. So it's like a one-liner now. But I guess it wasn't that one maybe, but there was some other thing that got removed from active support similar to that or something that also is broken Devise at the moment. And there just hasn't been any merged pull requests. Like there's a PR for it, but it's been 2 weeks since there's been any commits in Devise. Yeah, this is active support dependencies.reference. I don't even remember seeing that ever, but it's some method that was, what is, I don't even see it. Oh, there. Yeah, it's just a one deleted line and in divides basically and updating the tests. It was just a one method call and all they had to do was remove it and it was fine.
Awesome.
Yeah. Hopefully that'll get merged soon and at least devise master would be usable, but also they're waiting on OmniAuth 2.0 support with devise. It's been some major, major things changing lately. All good things, but all still kind of up in the air and we're still waiting on them to come through. So yeah, well, fingers crossed we'll have it before Portland RailsConf.
All you can ask for. Well, good to catch up with y'all.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess I can't think of anything else. So yeah, I guess we'll talk to you guys next week.
Sounds good. We'll see you
later.